Chapter 37. The atmosphere on the Mithraeum crystallized into hot, waiting agony. You would walk down a hallway and find Augustine and Autus fighting, their eyelids glued together in pink, smarting lines as they sparred blind in tight corners, rapiers flashing like light over water, then stopping apparently at random, before the Saint of Patience would say something like, "Okay, again, but airless," and you would hear a sudden pounding wheeze as both of them emptied the air from their lungs. Generally, you then took another corridor. The lictors also did what they perhaps should have from the very start, an organised, loosely planned, often contradictory sessions of instruction for Ianthe, and for you. You went en masse into the river, leaving your bodies behind to slump into sea curves, or at least yours did, the rest of them stood, and crunched the silvery sand of the bank beneath your feet as the three saints led you both to assemble wards. No blood or flesh or bone here. The first two might be scavenged, the last swept away by the capricious tide. You collected bits of dried wood. Dried wood? And empty coloured stones. Stones? From the banks of the river beyond death. And you collected armfuls of the sharply unkind osiers and tall feathery plants, the ones with long fibrous stems as tall as you were, and thin tangled leaves. Filthy salt wind whipped your faces as you formed wards from the flotsam that grew, apparently on the bank. And no ghosts passed you to wade down to the water. No ghosts heaved themselves out of the waters of the layer that Mercy Morn had called the Epiroic. They had fled for different climes. "The poor bastards are terrified," said Augustine. There was nothing to see in the river yet. No brain, no hint of beast, no far-off haze that indicated anything amiss. When you came around, you found you were the only one sitting in a circle of standing lictors, their faces like blank flimsy, their rapiers in their hands, their offhands at the ready. The Saint of Duty with his spear, the Saint of Patience with his small sword, the Saint of Joy with her net, Ianthe with her trifold knife. You stared numbly at these faces, wondering which one would betray God at the last. At the beginning of that last week, you still believed you might live, despite the briefing's assumption that you would not. In the middle of that last week, the Emperor of the Nine Houses, the Necrolord Prime, invited you to his rooms after supper to talk. When you sat in that now familiar armchair before that now familiar coffee table, the great window now a flat darkness, the ship a belly you were all nestling within, he surprised you by only offering you water and a very plain cracker. You found yourself able to nibble its edges and tasted only flour and salt.
"I know you said no the last time," said Teacher. "I respected it. I won't offer again, except to say, if at any point before the final shutters come down, if at any point before Mercy Morn locks me in, you come to me and ask to get locked in with me, it will be done. You have 10,000 years before you, Harrowhark."
You did not address this. Instead, you said, "Lord?
Teacher."
You said, "You are the Prince Undying. You are the Necrolord Highest. Why do we lock you inside an airless room?" He rested back in his chair and locked his fingers together over his belly.
"You've hit upon a sore spot, Harrowhark," he said affably, brown brows crinkling together. "I am your salvation and your light. Who should I fear?"
"I never meant to," you said, leaning forward. "I just want to understand. Please?"
"What happens to your body when you go under, Harrow? When you go into the river?"
You had long passed the point where you needed to think about it.
"The body enters a senseless state.
The lictor doesn't perceive anything around them in any sense. Even their necromancy fails. Instead, the secondary soul comes to the fore, the protection mechanism that can wield a sword even if their mind is gone, without conscious thought or awareness of its own, but with a perfect sword hand, if they were functional. The Emperor of the Nine Houses drummed his fingers over his belt. It still hurts you a little to look into his terrible eyes, the irises like black shadows of the Canaanite white, that iridescent absence of colour, a shade rather than a tint, the purity of the white ring, then the matte black of the sclera. You had never become used to it. A myriad ago, I resurrected 9 planets, he said, and I reignited the central star, and I called it Dominicus. As a reminder, Dominus Illuminatio Mea et Salus Mea Quem Timebo. God is my light. Harrowhark, if I went under, I'd enter that senseless state. And I am God. What if, 40 billion light years away, my people looked up to see Dominicus falter and go out? What if the very house beneath their feet died all over again as I turned my back upon it? You said, so if you die, the houses die with you. The star warming our system fails and becomes a gravitational well, as I understand it.
Yes, a black hole like the one that took out Cyrus, he said. I can only hope you'd all be dead already. Oh, there'd still be cohort ships, hold planets, a scattering of us. But we would be so few, and so many people hate us, and my work is not yet done. I cannot behold that apocalypse, Harrow. I think you are one of the only lictors who can really and truly understand apocalypse. It is not a death of fire. It's not showy. You and I would almost prefer the end if it came as a supernova. It is the inexorable setting of the sun without another hope of morning. Both of you fell into silence. If I fought the resurrection beast, I'd leave my houses to die, he said. If I fought the heralds, I might well go mad, which would be the same thing. So I'm shut in here, walled in, really, to prevent the Nine Houses becoming Nun Houses with left grief.
He looked very tired. He looked very rueful. He said,
once again, you're not the only one with limitations. May I ask you a question, teacher? You're not sick of them yet? You said, who was A.L.?
His eyes flew open. God sat up straight in his chair, looked at you in open astonishment, and he said,
are you sure you want to go with that one? Let's go through all the other, less awkward ones first. How is a baby made? I can do that, easy. I mean, I don't want to, but I'm ready. I have this little book about babies, bodies, friends and family. Are you and Ianthe being safe?
It was your turn to sit up straight in your chair and in tone, constructing each syllable with the same rigid emphasis you might give to a skeleton.
We are not intimate. Sorry, I mean, you're about the same age. I don't really know how this goes anymore. We've all been alive for too long.
Neither are we romantic. Neither are we, frankly, platonic.
Sorry, he added. I should not assume these things.
If your paint could have baked upon your face and crumbled off like clay, it would have. If you could have willed the saint of duty to burst through the door, skewer you through and parade your gored body around the room, you would have. You began to get up.
If I have overstepped, teacher, forgive me. I withdraw the question. No, he said. Let's talk about her. Let's talk about my bodyguard.
Carefully, you sat back down. God said,
you've been listening to Augustine and Mercy Morn.
Yes.
It wouldn't be Ortus. Poor Augustine, poor Mercy. They still feel badly. They still carry their apportioned blame. I think, yes, that it's time for you to know about A.L.
He pronounced her name, as both his wayward saints had, as two clearly separate letters. You could hear the A and the L. He said,
It stood for a couple of things. A joke, mostly. I often called her Annabel Lee, Annie and Laurie. When I first met her, I just called her First. One. She had a real name, but I buried it with her, and nobody says it anymore. She has been dead for nearly 10,000 years, but she keeps her vigil with me as a memory, if nothing else. Annabel Lee was my... What do I call her? Guide? Friend? I'd hoped so...
You did not know how to respond to this. He did not seem to need a response. God said,
She was the first resurrection. She was my Adam. As the dust settled and I beheld what was left and what was gone, I was entirely alone. The world had been ended, Harrow Hark. One moment I was a man, and then the next moment I was the Necrolord Prime, the first necromancer, and more importantly, a landlord with no tenants.
You said, Teacher, what destroyed the house of the first?
Not much, said the Emperor, and he tried to smile. It was awful. Rising sea levels and a massive nuclear fission chain reaction. It all went downhill from there.
This quiet admission provided the first details you had ever heard of the pre-resurrection extinction. As mythologies went, it felt distant and unreal. He continued.
It wasn't gorgeous dust to be left in, Harrow. I was dazed. I was bewildered. And she was my defender and my sole companion and my colleague in the scholarship of learning how to live again. It was bloody difficult. I had never been God.
He trailed off here. Then he said,
She lived to see what happened at Canaan House. Not that she took much interest. My first resurrection was not a normal human being, Harrow, and she struggled to pretend. Anger was her besetting sin. We had that in common. And when the cost of lictorhood was paid, when the emotions were at their peak, we found out the price for our sin. The monstrous retribution. To be chased for our crime to the ends of the universe, to have our deeds stain our very faces and follow after us like a foul smell. She died after that first terrible assault.
You did not say, I am sorry. You did not offer empathy. As with many mysteries, this one had turned out to be sad and dull. The Emperor of the Nine Houses had someone, and then, like all his lictors, the Emperor of the Nine Houses had lost someone. It was your story. It was Xianthe's story. It was the story of Augustine and of Mercy Morn, and of Ortus. It was Kithareo's story, and that of all the lictors who had died over that long, dark sheaf of years.
I understand why Cavaliers Primary carry their house titles, said God. It makes sense, but it is a corruption of the original. Do you know why you're really the first? Because, in a very real way, you and the others are A.L.'s children. There would be none of you if not for her.
And then the Emperor of the Nine Houses set down his empty mug of tea with the residue of ginger biscuit crumbs within. You had no idea, in those seconds after the gentle clink upon the table surface as the universe held its breath, that he was about to say the worst thing that had ever been said to you. The fine, forbearing lines at his forehead and at his eyes crinkled earnestly, and he said,
I like to think that she would like you. You'd make a hell of a daughter, Harrow Hark. I sometimes indulge in the wish that you'd been mine.
There had been a moment in your life when you were convinced that you were about to spoil your substance at the foot of Ianthe Tridentarius's altar. You had been granted reprieve. There was no such reprieve for you in that moment. You had not sold the marrow of your soul for stolen eyes and a half-hearted kindness. What dismantled you, you bereft idiot, was not even the god who made the ninth house, the emperor all-giving, the kindly prince. Your end appeared in the form of a grown adult telling you that they might have liked you for their own. You hurled the glass to the table. It shattered into a flower of water with a crackling multitude of shards for sepals. You stood upon that table. It creaked beneath your weight. God had half stood to stop you when you sank to your knees on the glass. You kneeled into obeisance on the razor-sharp fragments, pressed your palms down into the shrapnel, and you folded yourself into wet and bleeding penitence before him. He said,
"Harrow, no." He was distraught. He said, "Please, Harrow Hark, I'm sorry. I have obviously said something immensely stupid. I do that, eh? I never wanted to hurt you." He said, 10,000 years, and I am still such a fool."
You might have told him of the traitor. Instead, you said,
"I broke into the locked tomb."
After a moment, God said, "You did not."
"The wards to the stone were easily bypassed," you said. "The line of reverend mothers and reverend fathers has been responsible for their upkeep for years. The barriers and gates beyond were more difficult. I was 9 years old when I began, and 10 by the time I could traverse the shaft. I spent a whole year working on nothing but those locks. When I came to the blood ward on the stone, the ward of the tomb keeper, I did not know how to pass. It remains the most complex piece of magic I have ever seen. It was my first vision of the necromancer divine. But one day, when I was 10 years old, I decided to end my own life, Lord, and sometimes I think it was that which let me cross the tomb keeper's gate. I opened it. I saw the saline water that laps the stony shore, and I walked into the sepulchre. I have seen the tomb, and I have looked upon your death. My parents killed themselves over my heresy. I saw what lies within, and I will love it beyond my own entombing. Did I sin, Lord? Did I kill 2 of my fathers that day?" You were panting tiny, sharp puffs of breath from the back of your throat. You knelt on the broken glass on the flat table before him, damp with blood and water. You did not weep, but only because you no longer knew how. The Emperor of the Nine Houses could only have been quiet for 5 seconds. To you, it felt like 100,000 years. And then he said, very gently, "No, you didn't." You pressed your face into the surface of the table, and you closed your eyes so violently that the pressure stung your brows and cheeks. No star hung so still as you did then, at the end of its hard hydrogen burn, breathlessly waiting to slough off its outer layer. And he said, "Harrow, whatever you thought you did, you didn't." "I opened the outer door."
"Okay," he said.
"I went up the passage."
"I'll accept it, though that thing's a literal death trap," he said.
"I broke the ward, and I rolled away the rock."
"That's where you're wrong," he said.
You did not lift your head, but said, "I was 10 years old, but I was not a child. I set myself one task. I studied for one purpose. Don't consider my limitations, God. I am not a person. I am a chimera."
"We won't get into that. But don't think I am discounting the genius of a single-minded, necromantically augmented 10-year-old, he said. "I'm not saying that you didn't do it because you weren't good enough. Harrow Hark, I'm saying that nobody is good enough. There isn't a bypass. I built that tomb with Anastasia, designed every inch of it,
and I did not include a way in. I never wanted that tomb opened from either end. I made that ward, me, alone, and it wouldn't answer to the greatest of my lictors any better than the meanest infant necromancer in all the nine houses. Their might would be one and the same. The supernova of your heart went out, faded, as swiftly as it had shone. It became thick and miniature and dense. You lifted your head minutely, and an embedded fragment of glass fell from your temple, from a string of red blood. "It can't be broken," he continued. "It can't be contravened. It can't even fade. Its magic was my magic. The line of reverend tombkeepers has laboured under a misapprehension if they think the rock could be rolled away except by me. It's a pure blood ward, Harrowhark. Whatever you thought you did, whatever false chamber has been built around that tomb that you mistakenly stumbled into, there is no possibility that you breached the real thing. I am so sorry. You were party to a tragedy based on a misunderstanding. You were rendered down to your incoherent parts. You wanted to say, 'I saw the body.' You wanted to say, 'I saw the tomb.' But you were seized all over again by doubt in the face of fact. The uncertainty of the insane. The conviction of the mad. Nobody had seen you walk through that door. Nobody had watched you leave. What he saw in your face, you had no idea, only that he crouched, and he looked at your blind, bleeding numbness with those thonic eyes, and he wiped his thumb over the part of your temple where the glass shard had buried itself, and he tucked a stray lock of hair behind your ear with the thoughtless, gentle tidiness of a parent. Then God's eyes widened fractionally, and his voice became altogether different when he said, 'Harrow, who the hell's been tampering with your temporal lobe?' Your body rolled itself off the table with such a reflexive suddenness that you were not sure that the action was through your conscious effort. Your meat floundered to stand, wild with shards of lead crystal and a dozen cuts through your clothes, and you turned away. The Emperor said, 'Harrowhark,' as you stumbled away from the table, and more plaintively, 'Harrowhark,' as you unerringly careened to the door. But he did not follow. Somehow your hand slapped the pad that slid it open. Somehow your meat dragged itself away from him, and you walked and you walked and you walked. As the door closed, you might have heard, 'Damn it, John, damn it!' But the last thing you were going to do was trust your own ears.